Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. In fact, Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/podcastfree. All lowercase, shopify.com/podcastfree, shopify.com/podcastfree.
And now, prepare yourself for the only talk radio show you'll want to turn up.
Crank this thing.
Sirius XM Pandora presents the place where your hard rock and metal voice can still be heard.
You bet your ass, baby.
Unfiltered, uncensored, say whatever you want.
Hit the record button. Anything can happen, you know?
I know that ain't nobody out there came to be mellow tonight, now did you? I say there ain't nobody. I'll say there ain't nobody not out there that even wants to be a little bit mellow. Now is there? Anybody wants to get mellow, you can turn around and get the fuck out of here, all right?
This is the Trunk Nation Podcast with host A. Trunk.
What's up, everybody? It's Eddie Trunk, and welcome to the Eddie Trunk Podcast. Newsmaking interviews with the biggest names in rock and metal each and every week. Thank you for joining me, and thank you for listening wherever you are in the world. As I tell you guys each and every week, and I got to tell you this, I got to remind you of this, that everything you hear on the Eddie Trunk Podcast, all the interviews originated on my Sirius XM radio show, which is called Trunk Nation and heard live Monday through Friday, 3 to 5 p.m. Eastern on Sirius XM channel 103 Faction Talk or anytime on the Sirius XM app. If you're in the U.S. or Canada and you have Sirius XM, please join me each and every day live, 3 to 5 Eastern, noon to 2 Pacific. And if you can't listen in that window, that's okay because the full shows are archived and you can listen to them whenever you want on demand as well on the app. Also got the show on Mondays on Hair Nation with music and talk. That is 5 to 8 Eastern on 39. 6 live shows a week on Sirius XM. If you only listen to this podcast, you're only getting a tiny, tiny taste of what I do on the radio each and every day. And you can also get Sirius XM if you don't have it already for free. Yes, I said free for 3 months. All you got to do is go to SiriusXM.com/EddieTrunk. No credit card required. Sign up and sample for 3 months, and you can hear the full show and join us each and every day to engage with us in rock talk and conversations. Follow me on social media at Eddie Trunk, Twitter or X, Instagram, and Facebook page. Upcoming appearances, February 16th, I'll be in Norco, California, being joined by Phil X of Bon Jovi for a speaking show at Rock Stars of Tomorrow. February 17th, I'm in Long Beach, California at the Gas Lamp with some great tribute bands opening up for me. And again, that should be a lot of fun. The Gas Lamp in Long Beach, that's February 17th. Tickets for both are on sale now. Hope to see you if you're in Southern California or near those areas. Norco, Cal, which is near Riverside, I'm told. And also Long Beach, which is beautiful. I'm looking forward to being out there. So those are the next gigs for me, speaking gigs. Hope you come out and join me again if you're in that area of the country. EddieTrunk.com is my website for updates and info on everything I have going on as well in terms of appearances. They're right there on the homepage. Check out the merch page up there as well. All right, this week we've got two great interviews for you. We're going to start with Vince Neil of Motley Crue, and we're going to follow it with Scott Stapp of Creed. Two lead singers, of course, from their respective bands. And I'll give you the backstory real quickly on each. So this interview with Vince that you're about to hear took place a couple weeks ago at the music festival that I host in Key West, Florida called Rock Island. Now, Vince was not performing on Rock Island. He was just there hanging out. And he didn't even know, as you're about to hear, a music event was happening. Vince lives in Nashville. Told me it was real cold there. He decided to get into the sun a little bit, go to Florida, and found out there was a music festival happened, and he came by to check it all out. And he hung out at Rock Island for a couple days. We hung out for a while, actually, and it was good to see him. He looks good, seemed in great spirits. And I said to him on a Thursday. I said, hey, Vince, I'm doing my radio show from backstage every afternoon. Will you come back and come on the show? He said he would, and he did. And I really appreciate him doing that because obviously in the middle of the day in Florida, there's a lot you could be doing, but he was willing to come hang with me for a half an hour in my trailer and have a conversation, which you're about to hear. And the really cool thing about this conversation is there was no agenda. We were just talking. And he told a great story about scalping or bootlegging concert shirts as a kid, how David Lee Roth kind of took him under his wing. It's kind of a little different, you know, vibe here from Vince, just hanging out. And John Five calls in, who of course is now his bandmate in Motley Crue. So this was a lot of fun. I think you're going to enjoy it. We'll lead with Vince Neil. Just a couple weeks ago, this took place. And when you think about it, you really don't hear from Vince all that often in terms of, interviews. He really doesn't do much. It's mostly, you know, Nikki that does the talking for the most part for Motley. So it was cool to spend some time with Vince, and we'll get that to you first. Second, Scott Stapp. He's got a new album out called Higher Power, or about to come out. And of course, a huge reunion with Creed that is coming very soon, including amphitheater shows this summer and two sold-out cruises, which I will be a co-host on both of them. So it was good to talk to Scott. I have not talked to him for a while. He sounds like he's in a very good place, which is great to hear. And you guys will enjoy that one as well. So two big interviews for you this week on the podcast. Vince Neil, followed by Scott Stapp. We'll start in sunny Key West, Florida, with the lead singer of Motley Crue on the Eddie Trunk podcast. Backstage at Rock Island, and as I mentioned earlier, I'm just hanging out. This guy's not on the bill. I turn around, I literally run into him. He was supposed to be here last year. He didn't make it, and he's just here hanging out, and it's awesome to see him, and I can't thank you enough for taking some time out of your day to sit with me here in this trailer backstage when you could be doing anything else here in Key West. Vince Neil is here. Good to see you, bro.
Hey, good to see you too, bro.
Yeah, man. So you didn't even know this was happening, you told me last night.
I had no idea. And we showed up and we've seen all these rockers out wandering on the streets and stuff. And I'm going, what's going on here? And these people said, it's the Rock Island concert. And I'm like, that's pretty cool.
And then you said, well, who's playing?
Yeah, yeah. I got a thing. Somebody emailed me the flyer. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I said, oh, okay, this guy's playing. And
you were supposed to do it last year. Your solo band, right?
Yeah. Supposed to, but I had to come down with COVID.
Yeah. And I remember that. Yeah. Last minute, they kind of had to sub you out, if I remember.
Exactly.
Yeah. So what did you, what last night you were watching Felder.
Yeah, yeah.
What were your thoughts?
He's just great. You know, I played with him a few times before, and he's got the repertoire. You know, he's got all the songs, and you're sitting here watching him, and you're going, why is this guy just, you know, this is the Eagles. You know, it's all Eagles songs, and it's pretty amazing to hear him sing those songs.
Because, you know, I was sitting there, and when I first saw this on the bill, I was like, Don Felder sitting between Tom Kiefer doing Cinderella tunes and L.A. Guns, that's going to be like a – he comes out there, starts playing Take It Easy or one of these nights, yeah. That's going to be a different tone, you know? I didn't know if it was going to work, but like we were talking last night when we were watching, when you got songs like that everybody knows, yeah. They're just going to, you know, they're great songs are great songs no matter what.
Exactly.
It's always going to work.
Yeah, it definitely worked too. The crowd was great last night.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, he did great. It was cool.
So you were saying you wanted to come to Florida because you live in Nashville. You guys are getting zonked with weather,
yeah.
Right?
It was like 2 below when I left. And the snow is just, you know, when Nashville gets a little bit of snow, the city shuts down. You know, it's not like, you know, if you lived in Boston or something like that where it's all snows all the time.
Right.
You know, up there and just a little, you know, had a foot of snow and just shut the whole city down.
Yeah.
And I'm just going to, let's get on the plane and get out of here.
So you got out under the wire, though, right?
Yeah.
As far as what was going on to even be able to get here with the weather.
Yeah, we hit a, because the runways were still iced up. And we couldn't get out until yesterday. And then snow came again last night. And now the runways are all messed up down there in Nashville. And, yeah, so we're going to stay until it gets at least out of the zeros, the, out of the teens. Yeah.
Can't beat this, even though today's not a great weather day. It's a, it beats that for sure.
It beats it, absolutely.
Yeah. So let me ask you, man, how are things, how have things been going with Motley? I mean, since this whole thing ramped up again, you guys have been out there. I know you got some scattered shows announced this year. How you feeling about everything in the Motley camp?
I think it's great. The tour sounds like it's going to be a lot of fun, a lot of festivals, you know, and so I'm looking forward to going out. We start up in May, and we end in October.
When the whole I mean, you, for many people know, you are super active as a solo artist as well. You play a ton of shows with your own band. I know all those guys, Dana, Blando, Zolt. I mean, great people. I love those guys. And I love your solo shows, and you and I have done so much together with those solo shows, whether private gigs or public or whatever.
Yeah.
When the idea was presented to you to do Motley again and to reunite, initially it was for the stadium tour. But not a lot of people have heard from you. What were your thoughts about it? Like, were you immediately all in, or were you hesitant because of the whole retirement thing? You know, how did you feel about it?
We sat around for, 5 years without doing anything? I mean, I was always with my solo band, but I thought it would be fun. I was in. You know, I was in with the, they said, okay, we're going to get together and do some stadiums. And I was like, okay, that sounds pretty cool. You know, and a stadium tour was just got us out to more people, you know, and so it was a lot of fun.
Did you feel like coming off the dirt and the movie that it was inevitable that Motley would start up again, given the movie and the success of the movie?
I didn't even think about it. I didn't even think about Motley at all. I thought the movie was great, you know, and a lot of people liked it. And I guess it was inevitable, you know, because you get so many fans watching movies, and you know, at the stadiums you can tell because there's like you know, kids with their dads and their grandpas, you know, and you get young kid like 6, 7, 8 years old to 68 years old, you know?
Right? Different generations,
yeah,
that
generations.
Came on board,
yeah.
So is it, you definitely saw a lot of that, people bringing their kids and like getting a chance, because I see that. I mean, you know, I'm 59. We're around the same age, grew up with the same stuff. And you go to shows now, even if it's not your show, you look out in the crowd, and if the band's been around 40 years or so, you see that.
You see that, yeah.
Even here, I saw a lot of it.
Yeah. It's a lot of fun. It's good to see those little kids out there and doing the devil horns and stuff.
A new generation of rock.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
exactly. So the stadium tour, I mean, obviously that was with Leopard and Poison. Did you get to hang with those guys much? Did you get much interaction with the other bands on that or no?
With Def Leppard, we did.
Yeah. Well, you did a lot with them since then, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, we did after the stadium, we did, you know, South America, Australia, Japan, and most of Europe. You know, it was cool. You know, we hung out a lot. We actually flew together in South America. We had one big giant 737 or something. And it said Def Crew on her.
Yeah.
And so we flew with those guys. And so we just hung out a bit. You know, it was cool.
For you, going from doing like the solo shows where you'll play large clubs, theaters, you know, whatever, it's more of an intimate thing.
Yeah.
Then you do Motley, of course, still. And then Motley, you're in arenas or stadiums or whatever. For you as an artist, for you as a front man, what's your preference? What do you like better?
It seems like I have the best of both worlds. You know, I like playing the smaller places, like the Indian casinos and stuff like that. And, you know, usually like 1,200 people, you know, that's about the max those places have. But I love it. I love it because you can see the people's faces. You know, a stadium at nighttime, you can't see anybody.
Right.
You know, just maybe the front row. You can't even see the second row. You don't know if people are rocking out or not until after the song and you hear this,
right?
You know, and I really like both of them.
What was the biggest crowd you've ever played to in your career? The amount of people?
The US Festival, 1981.
Oh, what?
83. Yeah.
So just when Shout was coming out, right?
It wasn't even out yet when we played it.
Too Fast for Love and Shout. You guys were like first or second on the bill, too, right?
Second on the bill, yeah. That was pretty neat. That was 360,000 people there. You couldn't see where it ended. It was just all mass of people. And they had like four towers, you know, to get to all the people so they could hear. I don't know, you know, the people in the back, no way could they see the band play.
Yeah.
It's just too many people.
Yeah. Of course, everyone remembers that. I mean, it's a legendary show, and there's video and photos and all that. It's an amazing bill. That's Van Halen closed that night,
Van
right?
Van Halen, yeah.
The Roth letter. Was loaded and messed the words up.
Yeah. That was one show or he'd like to take back. How about?
Did you? I mean, I know it's 40 years ago, but do you remember having much interaction with any of the other bands on the bill? And like Motley was still an up and coming band at that time.
Yeah.
So were you guys a little kind of like wide eyed being in front of that many people and having Van Halen and Scorpions and all these guys around you?
Yeah. Well, we knew the Van Halen guys, but Dave, especially Dave. David come to a lot of our shows.
Oh, really?
You know, yeah, when Motley was playing like the Troubadour and the Whiskey, Dave was right there because we got all the girls.
Right. And you probably had all the other booze and other substances that he would have liked too.
Absolutely.
So he would hang and come see you guys,
yeah,
huh?
Yeah, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, he's the first guy. He kind of took me under his wing. I was just some, you know, club playing rock and roll guy. And he took me out to Canner's Deli. Fairfax.
I've been there, yeah.
And he just sat me down and he talked about what do you got to look for at a record company, publishing, and just kind of like filled my head with the inner workings of being in a rock and roll band. And that was really nice of him, you know. I was nobody.
Wow, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's
he
really,
kind of mentored you.
Yeah,
mentored you in
yeah,
a way.
Yeah, he did. Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, that's interesting. You hear so many different stories, like all these guys, yourself included. You hear all these crazy stories of this, the good, the bad, or whatever, and who's done what. But you don't hear a lot about that side of Dave that he would do that for you, because he could have very much looked at you as in a competitive way. I mean, here you are, you're coming up, you know, you're this great looking kid on the scene and that whole part. And I mean, even though Van Halen was well established still, I mean, you know, there's a competitive thing there.
Yeah.
Especially with a guy like that, with an ego and stuff. He could have been like, I'm not going to help this kid.
Yeah, he could have.
Yeah.
Could have very easily. He was just that kind of guy.
Did you see Van Halen growing up in Southern California? Did you see him in the clubs?
I didn't see him in the clubs, but I what I used to do is my mom would drive me to Long Beach Arena. Van Halen was playing there, and I didn't get in, but what I did was I was bootlegging t-shirts.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I was a kid out there selling shirts.
Is that right?
Out of my mom's trunk.
Oh, that's awesome. I used to, of course, buy those shirts at concerts.
Yeah.
And I used to watch guys like you get chased by security, you know, dump the shirts and run away.
Yeah,
you
it was
know?
In my mom's car, so she drove me there.
Your mom endorsed you bootlegging the shirts?
Yeah, absolutely.
Did you print them yourself?
Yeah. Yeah.
Really?
Had them printed, yeah.
Because the other thing, now I don't want to go off on the soapbox about this, but it's funny, I had no idea about that, because the deal was, like, as a fan, when you bought those shirts, you know, of course they were a fraction of the price of what was inside, but you guys would always buy what they would call, like, the irregular stitching, right? Did you used to buy those, where you get them cheaper?
I probably did. I don't remember. It was a long time ago. I was just like... 15.
So I'm getting geeky here, but the tags on the shirts, if they cut them with the scissors, that means that the stitching was a little off, which is why they couldn't sell them to stores. So you could buy it for a fraction of what the regular shirt would be, and at least in New York, the market I grew up in, you'd buy the shirt and you're like, oh cool, you get the shirt for $3, but then you get it home, you keep pulling on the collar and you're like, why is this shirt not fit weird? And you'd see it was cut. And I later learned that the bootleggers would buy the cut ones so they could make more profit.
Wow, that sounds... If I didn't do that, I was an idiot.
So who did you bootleg shirts on? Van Halen and who else?
Only Van Halen.
Really?
Just Van Halen, yeah.
That's hysterical, man. You got resourceful. Now that you got people bootlegging your shirts out there,
yeah,
I'm sure.
Sure, yeah.
You probably let them slide a little bit given your history, right?
Yeah, I mean, they frown on it, but like say down in Mexico, South America, really the bootleggers are like they make the best stuff. I mean, I've got like a bootlegged like these boxes of I don't remember, but they make these really cool boxes with spikes on them and stuff, and have your logo on it, but they make everything.
Yeah,
and Yeah, if you want to get some really cool Motley stuff, go to the Bootleggers in Mexico or South America.
It's endorsing the Bootleggers. It's hysterical. when we mentioned The Dirt a second ago, did you you said you liked the film?
Yeah.
How we all know those biopics, whether it's the Queen one or the Motley one, they get embellished because there's got to be a storyline. It's Hollywood. We get all that. How accurate was it specifically the scene where they come to see you play? I think the scene is you're in the backyard playing a backyard party, and I think it's in the movie Nikki and Tommy come, and I think you're playing a Billy Squier song. You're playing a cover. It's,
yeah,
at least in the movie. That whole period for you, how accurate was that? Was your band doing well, and that was the kind of like what you were doing, covers?
Yeah. I'd be, but they came to see me at the Starwood in Hollywood.
Okay, so it wasn't a backyard party.
It wasn't a backyard, but I was a backyard player. You know, I'd play all the backyard parties in high school. And they just kind of, you know, took some stuff and put it in there, which is accurate, but it wasn't exactly the way it happened.
Right.
You know, like, it's only, you know, an hour and 40 minutes for the film
right.
to get in, you know, 10 years of stuff.
Yeah.
But, I thought everything was accurate, really accurate in the movie, though. Some stuff, but like, our first show wasn't the Forum, for one thing. The first show was at the Starwood when we made it. We thought we made it anyway, and that's where. Wait, I'm getting ahead of myself. Doc and Doug, mm-hmm. They came to see us at New Year's Eve. We had two of John Forster's funny cars on stage, and we had that was our opening. They fire up the funny cars and they go really loud. That was our.
That's how Motley opened in the clubs.
Yeah. This is the L.A. The Santa Monica Civic Center.
Oh, that's a bigger place.
Yeah. And it was New Year's Eve, and we had a Miss Nude contest, and yeah,
of course you did.
Yeah,
why not? I
had to have that.
Right, exactly. So that's where what happened.
That's where Doug and Doc first saw us.
Okay,
but they didn't even put that in.
Right,
they just had Doc kind of emerge, you know.
Right,
but a lot everything else was really good. Like when they handcuffed Tommy to the bed, you know, that happened.
Yeah,
the flare thing. We shot the flare in Doc's room.
Yeah,
we didn't do that. We shot it in our own room because we had to share rooms back then. It was me and Tommy, and we bought these little flare guns, and we're like, how do you load this thing? We loaded one up and it just popped out, and then we loaded another one the other way, and just fireball, huge fireball, bounced off the ceiling and landed on the bed. And we were laughing so hard. We actually locked the door behind us because we forgot our keys. So, and we had to call the maid to open the door, and she opened it and smoke's coming out, you know, out of the seam of the door, and that was you know. It was pretty funny, but yeah, so it happened, but didn't happen the way in the
right,
film.
Right, as is usually the case with biopics. Moving, I know you can't and probably can't and don't want to talk about all that's gone on with Mick, because I know there's some stuff going on with legal things and all of that. But the big change with Motley is the arrival of the replacement for Mick, who I told you earlier is one of my dear friends, John Five, who may or may not be holding right now to want to say hello and talk to us. But what's it like been like for you having John in the band?
It's actually made me a better singer, because by having him, I don't have to worry about guitar anymore. I don't have to worry about playing the wrong song or losing his place in the song, which he did quite often. And but you know, John is just a guitar player. He's a spot on guitar player. He's I've never seen him without a guitar in his hand. I mean, he just sits there, you know, just plays constantly.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, he sits in his hotel room and plays a guitar.
A guitar or a Kiss collectible, always in his hands. Yeah. And with that, on cue, we welcome to the show via phone. The bat signal went up.
Yeah.
John Five has joined us.
All right.
Johnny.
Hey, guys. How are you?
Hey, buddy. How's it going, man?
It's going good, man. It's going good. I was laughing out loud at these stories of you selling bootleg Van Halen shirts at the show. That is amazing. I never knew that. Hilarious.
Yeah.
It is. I never knew that either. I think that's awesome. You know, and John, Vince and I were talking last night, and I was telling him what good friends we are and how, you know, your history with me and the show and all of that. And, you know, we were talking about the fact that first and foremost, you're still just a fan. And I was telling him he's got to get to your house and see your Kiss collection and all of that. But, you know, obviously you're in Motley Crue now and you're out and you've toured already with Vince. But being the fanboy you are, what's your Motley Crue Vince question you'd like to ask him on the radio that you haven't already in a dressing room somewhere?
I actually have a serious question. And if we were going... The songs we play, is there any song that we don't play that you would want to play live? Like anything we're not playing live, what would you want to play?
I always like the song Red Hot. You know, is
me
too. Yeah.
Can we get Nikki and Tommy on the phone and figure if we can make this all happen right now? You don't do that one? You guys haven't done that?
No, we haven't done it. We used to do it, and I'm sure, John, you know it. You know the song.
I know it.
And
Yeah.
So we could start rehearsing it, like, you know, right before the show, and he'd get it, and we'd get it. It's a fun song.
Yeah, it's a great song. Yeah. Great drum part in that, too, for Tommy as well.
Yeah.
John, what do you want to play that you're not playing? John, what do you want to play that you want Vince to sing that you're not doing right now? Reverse it. What do you want done?
I'll probably anything off of like Too Fast for Love or Shout the Devil or, you know, Theater of Pain or Girls, Girls, Girls or Dr. Feelgood.
It's a whole catalog. You know,
just
any
pick
of
one.
Those, any of those, you know, I'd love to do. So, you know, it'd be great.
Hey, John, you of course have a long career playing with a lot of people, but, and I know this is like a whole dream experience for you being a part of Motley. But, you know, you played with a ton of great performers and frontmen, obviously most recently Rob Zombie and all of that. What's the experience been like for you being on stage with Vince and being up there and running around and circling with him up there?
Well, it's really great because the first time I met Vince was at Tommy's party. And because I know Nikki and Tommy so well, and I was really, really excited to meet Vince and to get up on stage with him. So during the show, I'm always like moving up to him and rocking out with him and stuff like that. Or if he's on the other side of the stage, I'll run on the other side of the stage and rock out with him and stuff like that. So it's really, it's wonderful. It's such a wonderful experience to be up on stage with the guys and playing those songs that, you know, we all love and we grew up with and, you know, we still love, and we're just continuing on, and it's just, it really is a dream. And, you know, wait till you hear the new stuff, too. It's crazy incredible.
Yeah. Well, yeah, we didn't touch on that yet. Yeah. And Vince, what are your thoughts on that?
We recorded these songs a little while ago, and they're really good songs. I don't know what to say. We're gonna play those this summer. How many songs did we record? Four?
Yeah, I think we recorded three or four. Yeah, and they're monsters, you know. So super excited about that to play those. Super excited.
Any idea when we're going to hear the first one? Do we know when actual music's going to come out?
I don't know. I know we're doing music with Scott Borchetta.
Big Machine?
Big Machine.
That's the label for it?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. John, you probably know something but can't say it. I can tell already. I'm hearing the silence. I'm hearing John's uncomfortable silence. Like, I better not say anything. He's always so worried.
If you know, let me know.
Coming. Yeah, send a text to Vince so he knows.
This is when it's coming out. It's coming out on... So everybody look forward to it. That was my sound effect for blocking it out when it's coming out. So,
Are you playing guitar right now?
Always.
Do you have a guitar in your lap?
Always.
Of course he does.
I know.
Always. All right, man. Well, listen, I'll let you go. I'm going to finish up with Vince so we can get on with his day here, too, as well. I don't want to hold him too long, but I appreciate you checking in.
All right, Vince. I'm looking forward to seeing you, buddy. And, Eddie, I'll see you soon.
All right, man.
Yeah, dude. Great hearing from you, and good luck on your tour, dude. It's going to be fun.
All right. Thank you, man. And, you know, I'll text you all the time. Take care.
Thanks, yeah, you buddy. Start, John, when do you start? You start, like, next week, right, with the Creatures?
I start Friday in Orange County and then Saturday at the El Rey. So, yeah,
I'm going to see you in Vegas. I might not be in L.A. for that show, but I'll be in. I will catch you in Vegas. I got it on my calendar.
Okay, I'll be there. And then I'm packing my warm unmentionables because it's going to be cold.
Yeah, enjoy your last days in Southern California, buddy. You're gonna in for a shock when you get out there.
All right, guys, I'll talk to you soon.
Take care, buddy.
See you, buddy. See you. There he goes, John Five, checking in for a little bit. So just wrapping up, man, because again, I appreciate the time. I don't want to keep you too long. What do you have? Do you have any? You have solo stuff coming up as well outside of the Motley stuff?
Yeah, I just played two shows last week. One in Tulsa and one in Oklahoma. I don't know where it was, but it was another place. And I'm not doing anything in February because it's my birthday month. And
so you take the whole month?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
That's great.
Yeah. It's just,
what do you do for a month?
Get warm, go to the beach. You know, going to be in the Bahamas for a while.
And, okay.
And Florida and down here in the Keys.
So, how old are you turning, if you don't mind me asking?
63.
I thought maybe you were going to, because I'm 59, I'm like flipping out that in 8 months I'm going to hit 60.
Yeah.
So I didn't know if you were like right at the same age. Was it a head fuck when you hit 60?
Yeah.
I bet, because I'm freaking out.
It was. I was like, oh man, 60. I never thought I'd make it to 60 and still be in Motley Crue.
Yeah. You know? Yeah, right, exactly.
You know, Nicky's 65. He's an AARP guy.
Yeah. You know? Well, I get those in the mail. I rip them right up.
I get emails from him all the time.
I get them physically in the mail. I tear them right up. I get all angry and I throw them in the garbage. I was like, what are you talking about? There's good discounts there. I'm like, no way. I'm not going down that road. No. I'll pay the extra money. I can't do it.
Yeah, exactly.
Because I don't know about you, and I say this all the time. I feel like rock and roll keeps us young. I really do.
Yeah.
And I don't feel 59 years old. I literally, especially being out, like last night we were watching music, having a drink. I feel like I'm 25 still.
Yeah.
Do you get that as well?
Yeah, until I wake up in the morning, my back hurts, my feet hurt.
When
getting off stage, you know, every bone in your body hurts from running around on stage and my hands hurt from holding the microphone.
Yeah.
You know, it's just,
well, I was at that show in Tennessee I hosted a few years ago where you fell off the stage.
Oh, yeah.
That was scary, man.
Yeah, well, I fell in that hole.
In the gap.
Yeah, in the gap between the stage and the floor monitors.
Yeah. That was probably, you broke some ribs, right?
Yeah, I broke four of them.
That had to be a bitch to recover from, I would think, right?
I felt it for a year afterwards.
You know?
And I still feel it once in a while, you know, just... Yeah, it's one of those injuries, you know. It's being in a band is a dangerous business.
Yeah, no doubt, especially the way you guys are up there. And one other thing that I wanted to ask you that fans always ask me about, when it comes to your solo stuff, you made a good run of solo records, and you had some good success, songs like Sister of Pain and things like that. When you play with your solo band, you basically do all Motley. One day, would you ever consider incorporating some stuff from your solo records in?
We do You're Invited, But Your Friend Can't Come.
Oh, you do?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, we do that one.
So would you like to do more? Like, how do you feel about some of those records? Do you?
I liked Exposed record. I thought that was a great record. It'd be put ahead of its time.
Right.
But and there's a lot of good songs on there. But, people want to hear Motley.
Yeah.
You know, they come to see me. They don't want to hear the solo stuff. So
right.
I threw in the one song, but, you know, we don't play that long, really. You know, especially in casinos, they want people in, watch the show, and out.
To gamble. You
know, they would go gamble, yeah.
Right.
And so we don't have a whole lot of time. I don't know what I'd cut from the set to put in a Vince Neil tune.
Right.
But, well, we found the one hole.
Right.
And, You're Invited, But Your Friend Can't Come. It's a cool song.
That record you did which is probably the last one, Tattoos and Tequila. I thought that was a really cool record. I like that record. The covers you did on there were great. You had some original songs on there, a couple. I thought that was a and that was made with your current band, right?
Yep.
It was made with Blando and Dana and those guys, right?
Yep, exactly.
That's a, that was a really good record, man. I thought people that didn't hear that, they should check that out. I thought there was cool stuff on there.
Yeah, thanks, bro. It was a lot of fun because those are all my favorite songs I grew up with.
Yeah, you did. I think you did Aerosmith, Nobody's Fault, I
Nobody's
think.
Nobody's Fault,
like, cool songs.
Off,
like,
off the Rocks album.
You, didn't you do She's a Whore, Cheap Trick, too?
He's a Whore.
He's a Whore, rather. Yeah. She's a, I got to change it. God, get in trouble. Rick Nielsen's going to text me. Yeah. No, that was that was awesome, man. That was a really cool record.
Yeah, I did like a lot of the songs you don't know who it was, you know, because you, a lot of people don't go that deep into the records. And but, like, He's a Whore is, you know, Cheap Trick, I love that song.
Yeah, and, great song.
Yeah, but people would go, what's that? What's that song?
Yeah.
You know, and Aerosmith, Nobody's Fault, no, yeah, Nobody's Fault, right?
Heavy song, yeah, Nobody's Fault. Brad Whitford wrote that song.
Wow.
It's a heavy song. It's such a great song. You did a Sweet song, if I remember, on there, too.
Yeah.
AC/DC?
AC/DC.
AC/DC, I think, right?
Yeah.
Which is a sweet song.
AC/DC, yeah.
It's great, man. That was your stuff growing up, right? All that kind of stuff?
Exactly.
Yeah, that's killer, man. And lastly, you're wearing a Miami Dolphins shirt. My condolences.
Yeah.
I know you had a tough one there on the playoffs, but who are you rooting for now with the teams that are left?
Probably San Francisco.
Yeah.
I've always liked them.
Yeah. Who do you think's going to get it? San Francisco?
I think so.
You think so? Yeah. Baltimore looks good, man.
Baltimore looks really good, too.
Baltimore looks good. I mean, this is a big weekend. Obviously, this is really coming up tomorrow and Sunday is really going to be interesting.
Yeah, so I tell my friends, don't bother me. Don't text me. Don't do anything. I'm not gonna answer you.
How did you become a Dolphins fan, being a California guy?
Well, living in L.A., there was a time when we didn't have a team. The Rams had moved to St. Louis, and the Raiders came over for one season, and then they went back to Oakland.
Right.
And so we didn't have a team for a while, and I had a lot of friends in Miami, so I was in Miami a lot, and so I would go to a lot of the games, you know, and so I became a fan, and been a fan ever since.
I'll tell you people what a fan you are, and I'll leave you with this. I promise I'll let you go.
Yeah.
You won't remember this, but this is, 15, 20 years ago. You were living in Vegas. I was there. Vegas has these great Super Bowl parties. This year, they're hosting the Super Bowl, but even when they're not, they've got these great parties.
Yeah.
And a lot of times, you don't know about the parties because they're only people who are invited, guests, and all that. Because they kind of have to do them behind closed doors because the NFL can actually sue if you advertise Super Bowl and all of that. It's like a thing, right? So do you remember the Hard Rock used to do a great Super Bowl party right in the joint?
Right.
And used to go in and they put tables and it was a private thing. So I was there once with some friends. I got invited and you were there. And you came walking by right where I was sitting. And I'll never forget it because you were holding a Miami Dolphins helmet.
Yeah.
And I was like, you know, we were all having some drinks. And I was like, you know, and you came over like, hey, bro, what's going on? And he goes, I'm going to make my bet for the game. And the Dolphins weren't in the game, but you were just at this jersey and this helmet or whatever. But the funniest thing about that is you came, they sang the national anthem. You came back with your tickets from having bet for the game.
Yeah.
We're all holding our tickets and they played the national anthem. And you came running over to where I was sitting. You go to me, bro, I won already. And I go, the game didn't start. What the hell did you bet on? You bet the over-under on the national anthem.
Yeah.
And you won it.
Yeah.
I didn't even know you could bet that until you did it.
You can bet anything in Vegas, you know.
Do you generally bet on the games a lot?
I bet a lot.
Yeah?
Yeah.
How do you do usually?
I'm basically break even.
You know? Okay.
I win some, I lose some, you know, so I'm not getting rich off it, but it's a lot of fun for me.
Do you usually bet the national anthem?
Always.
You do?
Yeah, because you can tell if someone's, like if your dog died or the singer's going through divorce or something, they last a lot longer because they go, oh, say, you know, and happy people go, oh, say, can you see? And, that's how you know which way to bet.
So it's like if you're betting on horses, you actually do research on it.
Yeah. Yep.
Do you bet the coin toss?
I have, yeah.
You can't research that.
No.
That's just pure luck.
That's just luck, yeah.
That is awesome. Well, I'm going to call you or text you before this year's Super Bowl and ask you for the tip on the over-under on the national anthem.
Yeah.
I don't know, even know who's singing it. I don't know if they announced it yet.
But, well, I don't know.
But we'll have to find out, and then you can go to work and figure out if they've gone through a divorce or a dog died.
That's right.
And then let me know where it's at. That's awesome, man. Hey, I can't thank you enough for coming by, man. I know you could have done a ton of things here, so the fact he came over means a lot to me. So
Thanks, buddy.
Appreciate it.
It's good to see you,
Always
man.
Good to see you, too. And enjoy the rest of your time in Key West, man. Thank you so much. Well, it was great to visit with Vince. And again, I really appreciate him taking time out. He could have done so many different things there in Florida. But for him to take some time out and join me was really, really cool on in my trailer, dumpy little trailer backstage at Rock Island in Key West. So thanks to Vince for making the time to do that. Much appreciated.
Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. In fact, Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/podcastfree. All lowercase, shopify.com/podcastfree, shopify.com/podcastfree.
As I promised, a second interview this week. This is with Scott Stapp of Creed, talking about his solo album and the big Creed reunion. Here's Scott. Scott, how you been, man?
What is up, brother? How you doing?
Good. It's been a while since we've spoken on the air, and I'm honored to be one of the hosts on the upcoming Creed cruises. I know he texted you around that, and then I got your new music, and it just sounded so killer. I said, we're definitely due for a chat on the air.
Awesome, man. Well, I'm looking forward to hanging out with you on the cruises and excited about what's to come and glad to talk to you about the new music.
Yeah, man. So tell me about this record, because it's coming out on March 15th. It's called Higher Power. I know it's your fourth. For people that don't know, you've released a bunch of great solo albums, this being your fourth. What about the about this record and the approach to it, and that you might have been going for, that you were trying to, you know, do differently than the previous records or stay in that same pocket? Tell me about putting this one together.
You know, man, I don't really think or plan too much in advance when I'm in the creative process. I go in and I get with whoever I'm writing with, whether it be Giannis Papadopoulos or Scott Stevens or Marty Fredrickson or Zach Malloy, guys that I've written with for over a decade. And it's all about the vibe in the moment. And a lot of it just comes from whatever I'm going through literally at that moment in my life. And it gets channeled into music. And so we sit around and you know, we just start jamming until we stumble across a vibe that connects with the energy that I'm bringing in. And I really kind of approach this with less thought and more just flow. And really just, it's kind of a diary, again, of a snapshot in my life that I was living at the time. And to be honest with you, I'm still living now. And so it's a very personal record, but it's really a journey and a story. And I am excited to share it with everybody.
You know, to me, Scott, beyond your voice, which is very recognizable, that has really always been a signature of everything you've done, that you've always sort of bared your soul for better or worse through your music, haven't you? I mean, has music always been sort of a therapeutic thing for you and a platform for you like that as a writer and as a singer? Has that been a good outlet for you?
Yeah, 100%. I mean, music started saving my life when I was 9 years old. And, you know, if it wasn't for a music teacher that pulled me out, I tell this story all the time, that pulled me out of the principal's office because I just had so much energy and was just so excited. Unfortunately, they didn't know how to manage that. So they channeled me into music. And, you know, from that point on, music has been something that has just been an outlet for me to just express and deal with life on life's terms to the best of my ability. You know, and life has taken its twists and turns, and you know, it's no secret I've been down some dark roads, and I continue to go on this journey of life and have my setbacks and have my victories and have my experiences and struggles. But through it all, I just want to share that, and I've reached a place in my life where I hope that everything that I've gone through in my life, good and bad, that gets channeled into this music, can connect with someone and, you know, either inspire them, encourage them, help them during a difficult time, or help them not go down a path that I've gone down. And so that's really where I'm at in my life with my music. And I think unconsciously and consciously at times, that's been my goal since day one.
Is it hard as a writer to bear yourself as much as you have, or do you feel like when you look back on it in retrospect, and I mean, and some of the songs you've had a hand in writing have become massively successful songs. Is it, you know, when you look back on that, are you glad that you did that at that time? Is it a difficult thing to do as a writer and to be that open?
You know, I don't think about it like that. It's the only way I know how to write, Eddie. I don't know any other way to create. Whether I'm journaling, whether I'm writing poetry, or whether I'm writing lyrics, or whether I'm just freestyling something that turns into lyrics and melodies for songs, or even, you know, producing and arranging, I just do it on instinct, and I write from the gut, from the heart, from the spirit. And so I never look back on anything and regret what I've done, because it's all come from a very sincere and honest place. A lot of it at times is, you know, I'll write about how I want to feel, not how I'm feeling. I'll write about where I want to be, not where I'm at. Other times I'll write about the moment and exactly how I'm feeling. So it's just a spectrum, of inspiration, and there's no regrets. There's no regrets, and I just have always just wanted to connect with people, because I felt alone. And I think that's been a theme in my life, is this struggle of feeling alone. And I really want to claim with this record, and I have at other times in my life, but you know, being the age that I'm at right now, and I just want to claim what higher power is all about. And I want to make that my life. And I want to make that my future. And I want to make that my destiny. And I'm excited to share that song and then the journey on this record with everybody.
Yeah. And Scott, as you well know, I mean, your struggles over throughout your life have been very public. There are a lot of people, I'm sure, in your audience who, you know, aren't well-known frontmen, famous singers, rock stars, etc., that share the same struggles. I would imagine that throughout your journey and throughout your career in music, that you've probably heard from a lot of fans and a lot of people that your music has touched and helped, being this open and honest as you've been. Is that something that that you catch a lot of, being out there on the road and meeting fans and stuff?
Yeah, you know, I really do. And I'm really humbled by it. And it's encouraging to me, just as much as I'll hear the fans share with me how, you know, the music has helped them or connected with them or, you know, got them through a very difficult situation or been, you know, the theme track of a positive situation in their life. You know, I'm humbled by it, but it also edifies me and continues to motivate me in this purpose. And gives me hope that, you know, all these things that I've had to go through in life in order to create this songs was for something. It wasn't for nothing, because it's gone on to grow and impact something far beyond myself. You know, unfortunately, I've had to go through some valleys and some dark places, and also experience some highs and some wonderful moments in life to create this music, in order for it to connect with people how it is. And I'm humbled by it, and I'm very grateful, just honored that I've been blessed with the life that I've been given.
Two tracks so far out from the record, which again is out on March 15th. One is the title track, Higher Power. The other is a track called What I Deserve. Since those are the two tracks the audience likely would have heard already, what can you tell us about those two songs?
Well, I'd say a Higher Power is really based on this journey in recovery that I've been on. And, you know, it's the solution for me in order to stay sober and also to get back up when I stumble is my spiritual condition and my connection with God and keeping that strong, because for me, that's the only way. When I put my sobriety and my goal of living this life that I want to live, when I rest it on anything else but God, I fail, because those things go away. And that's what I've learned in this journey in recovery. And we call that finding the chinks in your armor. Just when you think you got it all together, life will throw you a curveball, and you'll revert back to, you know, trying to medicate that suffering and that pain, because that's really what it is at its core. And so when those things come, you learn your lesson, you pick yourself back up, and you reconnect with God and realize that that's the constant that's going to drive you and keep you down this path of sobriety and recovery. And that's what Higher Power is all about. You know, it really tells the story of an incident that Scott Stevens and I had been speaking about for years. And Scott Stevens and I co-wrote the song, and he had the title. And knew my story because we spent so much time in the studio together. And so we just came in and he had pretty much, I mean, I tell you, he had the title and he had the music bed. And he's like, man, let's hammer this out. Let's tell this story. And that song was born and it was right on time. And then with What I Deserve, you know, that song is really just about coming to a place in your life where you start to really awaken to relationships that you have in your life. And you really realize and find out who is or what your boundaries are as a human being and what we all deserve, you know, the basic necessities in any interpersonal human relationship, you know, kindness, respect, love, grace, you know, all those things. And that's where really that song was born. And I think the most incredible thing about that song for me is the showcase of Yiannis Papadopoulos and really getting to introduce the incredible talent and genius of his guitar playing. And I really think you can hear that on the solo, because not only is, you know, can he riff with the best of them and play as fast as anyone you can imagine, but he also can take you on this journey and show so much passion. And so, you know, he's been my guy for 9 years in my solo band, and I've really just been blessed with having Mark Cimani, one of the greatest guitar players of our generation, and then Yiannis Papadopoulos, who I believe at some point deserves to be in that conversation as well. I mean, he's an incredible talent.
Yeah. Well, judging from the performance on the record, I would agree with you. I was not familiar with him before he started working with you. And it's pretty incredible. You know, Scott, you referenced the fact that so much of this stuff is so personal to you, and that your journey and your ups and your downs and your struggles and all of that. And I'm curious, you know, how you are now, because you sound like you're in a great place. And before you came on the air, I was telling the audience a story about, I don't know if you remember, it was probably about 5 years ago, but I was actually in Houston for something else, and the promoter drove me by your show, and I had missed your show. You were just coming off stage, but we sat in your bus that night, and we talked for like an hour, and we had a great chat. And everyone, you know, when I told people that I spent some time with you and spoke with you, everybody said the same thing. Well, how was he? Was he together? Was he, you know? And I said, yeah, he was great. He's the nicest guy. We exchanged numbers. Super cool dude. We had a nice conversation and all of that. And you still sound like you're in that place. So Do you feel like a lot of your struggles and your issues and your recovery, do you feel like you're on pretty firm ground now? Do you feel like the worst of it's behind you and you've really come out the other side? Or do you still struggle?
Well, I definitely can say that the worst of it is behind me, because, you know, in the past, it would be a perpetual cycle. It was something that I was battling, you know, every day, and it would turn into months and years, and it was just a struggle. You know, at this point in my journey, you know, if I have a stumble, it's get right back up, get right back on track, life moves on, and take it one day at a time. And so, you know, I've come a long way in my journey in sobriety. And, you know, some people's recovery journey doesn't involve relapse. It's not a part of their story, but it is a part of mine. And each time that I have, like I said, the growth has come in that it's something that is caught within hours. And then I'm right back on track. And then I have to process that and learn, okay, what was the chink in my armor? You know, what was it? Because I thought I had it all shored up, you know? And so I look at it as an opportunity to grow. And so that can't trigger that to happen again. And so, you know, today I can tell you, man, I'm in a good place. You know, and I try to live life in the moment. And so in living life that way, I'm having a great conversation with you, man. We're talking about my solo record, Higher Power. We're talking about life and trying to live it right, and trying to walk the path. And then we're talking about all the Creed stuff that's on the horizon. So when you put it in context, man, I'm grateful. And I have to really live in that spirit. No matter what my circumstances are around me, I have to just take it one day at a time and try to stay in a spirit of gratitude. And all of us in life, and I don't want to preach on your show, but all of us in life, whatever our challenges are, I think you can apply these same principles and philosophies to any aspect of your life, not just people who are trying to stay sober, because we all have problems, man. Nobody's perfect. We all have struggles. We all have things that we can improve on and get better at. And on that quest of self-improvement and betterment, we can't let our mistakes define us. And I was talking to my pastor, and we were kind of going over the last 10 years. And he threw out a bunch of days, and he goes, hey, there was 3,600. He put out the number of days. And he said, you know, out of those days, when it comes to your sobriety, you've had 4 or 5 bad days out of 3,600 and something days. And he said, put that in perspective, man. I'm proud of you, because those 5 days don't define you. Those 3,600 and whatever do. And I think that applies to all of us, despite, you know, like I said, no matter what you're trying to achieve and no matter how you're trying to grow in life, you can't define your life by your worst days. You have to define your life by your best days, especially when they outnumber the bad ones in such a profound way. And so I just want to encourage anyone who hears this not to get caught up and rehash the bad days. Build your life on your good days, and they'll just keep adding up.
Yeah, yeah, that is really some great advice right there. March 15th is the release date for Scott's latest solo album. Again, Higher Power. 2 tracks are out now. You can pre-order the record now. And last thing on this, then I'm going to ask you a couple quick Creed things and I'll let you go, Scott. We're going to touch on this here in a second, that Creed has a busy schedule coming up with the tour and the cruises and all that stuff you have lined up. But are you going to be able to find some time in that schedule to go out and do live shows in support of your solo music?
I sure am. Everyone stay tuned. I got a big announcement next week about a solo tour in March. I've got some solo dates here. Check it out on scottstapp.com. I've got some solo dates here coming up with Daughtry at the end of this month. Okay. And then in between the Creed runs, I'll be doing solo tours. I've got another one I'll be announcing coming up in May after the Creed Cruise. So yeah, man, it's going to be an exciting year of, you know, doing our thing with Creed and all the positivity there. And then also getting out and doing my solo touring in promotion of this record.
So, you know, I was, this is so funny. Like, I don't know, maybe four or five months ago, if that, I was in Vegas where I have a second home, and I was with Mark Tremonti. We were at a bar, we were hanging out, we were having a drink, we were talking. And I said to Mark, I said, you got some unfinished business out there with Creed. And he looks at me, goes, oh yeah. I go, I don't care what's happened or what people have said in the past. The bottom line is you guys sold an insane amount of records. You're a new generation's classic rock. And I said, all these people are sick of seeing the same bands come through every year on the same festivals and things. He said, there's some big business out there if you guys ever pulled it together again. And I'll never forget it, Scott. He kind of like, you know, he's having a drink. He kind of looked at me, gave me like a little smile. He goes, yeah, well, we'll see. And then like a week or two later, the cruises were announced. And I texted him. I go, you son of a bitch. But do you feel that way? Do you feel like, you know, for you coming back together with Creed and everything that's lined up? And I know the cruises sold out in seconds. They added the second one. It sold out in seconds. And now, talking to some people, they're saying your amphitheater tour this summer is like one of the hot tickets of the summer. How do you feel about all this? I mean, did you expect to see this kind of reaction, or is it surprising? What are your thoughts about all of it?
Well, you know, it's not surprising in the context of, I knew that there was a new generation of Creed fans being born. And then also, you know, the fans from the past re-engaging with Creed because of everything that was going viral, you know, started in late 2020, then in 2021, 2022, 2023, you know, between TikTok and Instagram and YouTube and all the social media platforms, we just started having this resurgence. And it was shocking at first because I was like, it came out of nowhere. But to see the reception and to see that there was so much love out there for the band, I expected a positive reaction and a positive reception, but I didn't know it was going to be like this. You know, I had no idea. I've never done the cruise thing before, so I didn't really know what to expect there. And when I found out how fast it sold out, and then, you know, when I found out, you know, how the ticket sales are, for the amphitheater tour, I was surprised that it was going that fast and there was that much demand. So yeah, a positive reception I expected, but I didn't know it was going to be that big.
Do you hope to, any of you guys, well, have you guys rehearsed or been all in the same room yet together? Because I know everybody's a little bit scattered. But and do you hope to, or do you want to do new music with Creed at some point? Has there been discussion about that?
Well, yeah, Mark and I were together a couple of days ago doing something like some secret thing I can't share. But we were hanging out for a couple of days, and as we were hanging out, you know, we just began talking about how we wrote Human Clay, and we wrote Human Clay while on the road touring my own prison. And we wrote it during sound checks. You know, 80-90% of that record was written on stage during sound check. And you know what we'd do? We'd write a song and we'd get it tight and play it within 3 or 4 days of writing it, because we didn't have enough material with just that one record to be a headliner, but we were headlining shows. So we didn't want to fill our set with covers. So we were writing on the fly and just playing new songs, you know, as we wrote them. And so we were talking like, you know what, that was a really good experience. Those were good times. And both of us connected, and I could see in his eye and I was feeling it too, that, you know, I think there's going to be some writing happening, and it's going to be organic. It's going to be like, and I think it's going to be beautiful, man. If we get back to that place and that chemistry, which I think we're going to fall right back into once we start playing these songs together and we reconnect with through our relationships, through the songs that we created together. You know, I think it's only natural for us that, you know, during sound checks, sometimes in the dressing room, you know, wherever and whenever we're together, that songs are going to be born. I mean, it happened on the Full Circle tour. We wrote a bunch of songs during soundcheck during that tour. And so we're sitting on those. But I think we're all in a fresh space. And I definitely think the creative juices are going to flow. And so I definitely think there's hope for some new music.
All right, and looking at this thing and you know, for the Creed fans out there that are so excited about this, are you looking at this whole Creed thing as more of like one step at a time, take it as it comes sort of thing? Or is this, do you want this to be an ongoing yearly, every other year thing? Or, you know, or is this just a reunion to kind of reconnect after 10 years? Like, how, from your vantage point, how do you see it?
Well, it's evolved. I'll be honest with you. You know, initially I was taking it like, all right, let's do the cruises. And then let's kind of see what happens from there. But the reception was so incredible. And like I explained before, everything that was going on viral, that, you know, the tour just got presented to us and we couldn't say no, especially with, you know, the positive interaction that was happening with the band behind the scenes. And, you know, I really am hoping that, you know, all this positive energy and positive mindset and, you know, just collective mindset that this is something that we finally need to, you know, really cherish and nurture and really give our fans what they want. And that it actually benefits everything else we're doing as well. You know, there's definitely been some dialogue and some conversations about, you know, this being something that continues. But again, there's still a little bit of that, let's see how it goes kind of deal. So I think, you know, part of us are in the moment saying, yeah, let's, you know, the excitement of this, let's, you know, let's make this something we do all the time. And then the other half of us is, all right, well, let's see how it goes. So with both of those, you know, headspaces kind of living together, I think that's a positive recipe. So if everyone just shows up with that right attitude, I think, you know, not to sound cliche, but it is cliche, I think the best is yet to come for Creed.
And you know, that is one of the cool things about the music industry now, because years ago, decades ago, it wasn't really like this. When people had another band or two outside of a band, it was always like viewed as, well, there must be a problem or whatever. Now it's the norm. I mean, I can't think of anybody that doesn't have at least two bands they're doing at the same time. So even for you, yeah, you've got your solo career, four solo records, and then you've got Creed if you want to do it. I mean, Tremonti, if I count it all up, Mark's got like four things, because now I'm curious, man, what you think of this. He's now a crooner doing Sinatra. You must have heard him doing that.
It's incredible. I think he just kills it. And he just continues to just blow me away. When he sets his mind to do something, he gets it done. And he always does it A-class, top notch. And I'm so proud of him for that. You know, I mean, it's incredible the causes that he's supporting, for Stella, and the Down Syndrome Foundations. The whole Sinatra thing is, I think it's just super cool. And he looks cool doing it, man. And he sounds great.
Yeah. Did you ever think he'd, I mean, you know, I remember when he first started singing a little lead vocal, he was always telling me how he's always apprehensive about it. And now he's out there, you know, doing Sinatra. I mean, when you first met him, did you ever think he had that in him to be a lead singer like that?
I'll be honest with you, no. And I'm not going to get into the details of why, but, you know, I think you're right. I think you characterized it right. I think it was just a little bit of apprehension. I think it was a little bit of fear, but I think it was always in him. He just had to get to the place where he felt comfortable and confident. And Mark's the kind of guy that when he wants to do something, he practices behind the scenes and prepares. And, you know, I think he did what he had to do to get his confidence to the place where he owned it. And he sure did. And I'm proud of him and excited for him and happy for him that he's doing exactly what he wants to do in every area of his life.
And for you as a singer, how, I mean, I'm listening to Higher Power. I'm listening to tracks on this record. I pulled up some stuff on YouTube of you doing some live stuff recently. Your pipes sound exactly like they always were, which is amazing because although you're certainly not old by any stretch, you've been at it for a long time. For you vocally, what's your regimen like to maintain, and what's it going to be like for you to dig into the old Creed stuff again? Is there going to be, you know, some stuff you have to work on to do that, or is that just going to come right back to you?
Well, you know, I still sing those songs and have for years. And I think the key for me is, you know, sobriety suits me well, and it suits my instrument well. You know, my body is my instrument. So keeping that in the best condition that I can and, you know, not doing anything that affects my vocals in a negative way has really made me a better singer, you know, a way better singer than I was, you know, even back in the day when I was just a throat singer. You know, now I've you know, have learned how to properly sing, and I've taken vocal lessons from some of the greatest teachers ever, you know, namely Seth Riggs, and really learned proper technique and form. And so, you know, working on my craft and my instrument as a singer has definitely benefited me and made me better than I was in my youth. And one thing too is with being healthy and trying to stay fit and protect my instrument, it's really enabled me to even expand on me being a performer. And that's something else that I take pride in, is not just, you know, my vocal performance, but my physical delivery and my physical performance on stage, and really getting in the moment and being able to deliver the vocals how I need to deliver them, but also deliver them in the context physically that matches the emotion of the song. And so, you know, there's more than just singing. There's also performing. And I think just staying fit and healthy keeps that going. And, you know, and for me also, you know, really finally stepping into something that I've always done behind the scenes, but never really, you know, slapped my name on it, in terms of, you know, producing and arranging and finally claiming that aspect of my creative ability has been something that, you know, I really got to put forth on this record. Something that I've done behind the scenes on all the records. But this one, you know, I finally owned it, and something that I'm definitely looking forward to getting into more in the future, because it's something that I love to do. I love the behind-the-scenes stuff. I love the studio stuff. And I'm looking forward to, you know, working with other artists and helping them develop and make records.
Yeah, and you co-produced the new record, Higher Power, that's coming out with Marty Fredrickson, who's obviously a super talent as well, and Scott Stevens, and who Scott you had Stevens. Mentioned before.
Yeah.
So that's awesome. You know, and last thing, Scott, and I'll let you go on this. You know, you talked about how important music was to you and how much it helped you as a kid and how therapeutic it was for you. And I think many people who love music and dedicated their life to it, whether it's what I do on the other side of it or what you do as a performer, whatever the case may be, they feel the same way. And they all have those records, those singers, those people that they go back to, those records that are like a warm blanket that they listen to when they you know, when they want to, you know, go back and they need to just escape for a little bit. So for you growing up as a kid, what were those singers? What were those records? What were those bands that you still call on now when you want to escape and listen to stuff that isn't your own music? Like what's the stuff that you still love and listen to that held up for you from when you were a kid?
Well, if we're talking about records that I hold on to from a kid, U2 Joshua Tree has been a mainstay. It's a record that, you know, comforted me and was like a warm blanket, like you said, during some, you know, really tough times as a kid. I don't think I took that cassette out of my cassette player in my car or in my house for like 3 years in my teens. You know, Def Leppard Pyromania was a record that I got into when I was, you know, 9, 10, 11 years old. And that record really set the tone and inspired me to want to be in a rock band. You know, so I got to credit Def Leppard for planting that seed in me as a little boy to want to be, you know, and do what I do today. And, you know, the Doors were a tremendous influence on me. I always say this, loving the Doors and being a fan of Jim Morrison and the band was a double-edged sword as a young person, because it definitely helped, you know, along with how Bono approached lyrics, you know, the way that Jim Morrison approached lyrics in terms of them being able to stand on their own as a piece of art, even outside of music. You know, that was something that I took away from the Doors. But I also took away in my youth that rock and roll lifestyle, which I found out, you know, didn't suit me well. And so I'm here today, lucky to be alive and blessed for all this opportunity that's in front of me. So we got to be careful when we're in our youth, you know, what we take away from the artists that we love.
Yeah.
But those are the three bands that had the biggest impact on me. Now, as a vocalist, in my younger years, it was actually gospel music that had the biggest impact in me. I think a band, and I know a group called Take Six, literally trained me every day. When I was in the shower, I would sing to one of their first records and learn all the different vocal parts in their group, and began training my voice on that record. Even Boys to Men, when I was younger, I would sing their records from top to bottom, and that was just training my voice and expanding my range and my vocal capabilities. So although I didn't go in that genre, those artists had a big impact on me as a vocalist.
Yeah, a lot of diversity there. Really interesting. Listen, man, I can't thank you enough for the time, and congratulations on the new record. Again, Higher Power is out. Everybody can get it on March 15th. You can pre-order it now, the fourth solo album from Scott Stapp. All you got to do is go to his site or the Creed outlets. You'll see a ton of Creed dates coming up, their first shows in about 10 years. And, of course, it all starts on the two Summer of 99 cruises that Creed headlines starting in April. Both of those are sold out, and I'm psyched, man. I can't wait to see you, and I appreciate you guys having me on the ship, and I can't wait to see you in April on the boat.
I know, man. Looking forward to it. We're sailing away.
Listen, man, best to you and your family. You know where to get me if you need anything, and good luck with the record, and I'll see you on the ship.
Hey, thank you, brother. Touch base soon.
All right. Take care, Scott.
All right. You too.
Well, Scott certainly sounds like he's in a good place at this time in his life, which is great to hear. Creed getting ready to start up, and really some big interest in big ticket sales for that going on. And I'm excited to be on board both of their cruises as a host. Looking forward to that coming up very, very soon as well. Check out Scott's new album coming soon. Couple singles out there already. Again, the album is called Higher Power. Thanks for listening to the podcast. Much appreciated. Again, follow on social media at Eddie Trunk. EddieTrunk.com is the website. And be sure to listen each and every day live, 3 to 5 Eastern, Faction Talk, SiriusXM Channel 103, or anytime on the SiriusXM app. Listen to Trunk Nation. You'll get the full picture. Instead of just a little taste, you'll get the full picture of what I do. And you can engage with me because the show is live. Again, you can listen on the app if the hours don't work for you for the live broadcast. See you next week for another podcast. Hopefully catch you on the radio each and every day. Have a good week, everybody.
Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. In fact, Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/podcastfree. All lowercase, shopify.com/podcastfree, shopify.com/podcastfree.